Certainly good to be back again this evening to be able to continue in this subject matter. Yesterday, we spent virtually our entire time dealing with some principles that God lays down within the scriptures about marriage, the idea of the covenant relationship and how critically important it is that we grasp that principle. And we talked about, as was mentioned, finding God in your marriage was the lesson, but we talked about the importance that our marriages glorify God because the world is looking, and there may be no area of our life that is in any greater testimony as to God and His plan and what works and what His relationship with His people is all about than to show that through our marriages. And we also talked about how important it is to understand the work you have to put into it, as we talked about goals and plans and commitment and dedication in the Sunday morning Bible class. All of those trying to lay down some principles and some groundwork for the next three lessons, where we're going to talk about the practical side of those equations. When we read something like in Ephesians chapter 5, and if you want to open there, we'll be there in just a moment, but where God says something like, "Husbands, love your wives," I think most husbands want to follow that command. It isn't an issue that we don't want to love our wives. I think that sometimes it is an issue of us not really understanding day by day what that means. Exactly how do I make application of that? And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And I just warn you ahead of time, you ladies, don't get too quick in throwing the elbows. Because tomorrow night we got the other side of that equation. And so however sore your husband is after tonight may be a reflection of how many elbows he jabs back tomorrow as we talk about what you need to do to better understand your husband. Wanted to make one announcement just to kind of clarify things as we begin this evening. As I had spoken to the elders before coming, and they had discussed about these lessons. Two of the lessons yesterday were purely in a sermon form. The Bible class was a Bible class format. These next three, not only the one on Wednesday night, which is normally a Bible class anyway, but the one tonight and the one tomorrow night are more in a Bible class format. So I'm going to be asking for some feedback. I didn't want you to be shocked by that. That I'll be asking. It'll be limited feedback, but there are some things that I want you to at least participate in as we're talking about this particular subject. I would tell you that there isn't a man who's married in the audience that's been married more than probably a couple of weeks that doesn't understand both that picture and that title. It isn't that I don't want her to be happy. It isn't that I don't want to please her. Sometimes I just can't figure her out. How do I do what she wants me to do? It isn't that I don't want to do it. Sometimes I don't even understand what it is that she wants. Things that she says or things that she asks of me sometimes confuse me. One man said, there's only two times that a man doesn't understand a woman. That's not too hard to guess, is it? That's before marriage, after marriage. You're not going to understand her. We're going to talk about the fact of why that is. And secondly, what part of that equation is important as far as where we put our effort into all of this? So what's it going to take? When God says to me in Ephesians chapter 5, and if I was looking at that as if it was written personally to me, and He says, Mark, love your wife, how do I do that? How do I do that today? I mean, I understand that she has to be important, and I understand that I have to think about her, but how do I do that? What kind of things do I say? What kind of things do I do? And Ezra, it says of Ezra in the Old Testament, that Ezra gave sense to the law. And I think that's the job of those that preach the gospel. It isn't just to read the words that God has written, but somebody helps to give sense. How do I put that into today's life? What is it that God expects me to do? We're considerably different. Would you agree with that? Men and women, considerably different. There are times that we just cannot figure out why the other person is thinking the way they are. And you can take a very simple thing and understand the difference. Just think of a regular routine. And this is a little bit older routine for us, but it was an idea of Friday night. Friday night meant maybe going out to dinner, maybe going by the video store when they were still operational, before it was all already in your house. But going by the video store and picking out a video, you know, these days Friday night is more like Hey, you know what? Nobody's going to be at the grocery store. Why don't we stop by and do the grocery shopping tonight, and we can take the day off tomorrow that way. But we would used to have date night on Friday night. And I asked that dreaded question. More than once, I asked that dreaded question, what do you want to watch? And I knew as soon as I asked the question, I was in trouble. Because invariably, I knew what she would pick. I didn't know necessarily which movie, but I knew what she would pick. She would pick those movies that we call chick flicks, those movies that are romantic movies, those movies that, when they get a little bit older, will be replayed over and over again on Lifetime or Hallmark Channel and those kinds of things. They're, you know, they have a block on your TV, parental block, that you can block certain channels from your children. You clearly ought to have a block that allows you to block Hallmark and Lifetime. That's what I think. There's difficulty in understanding those things. So I would ask, she would suggest a romantic comedy. I would tell you, I would cringe when that would happen. I'm thinking, I can't do it. If I have to watch another impossibly beautiful couple meet under extremely improbable circumstances and fall in love at the beginning of the movie and then have some kind of tragedy strike where they fight and something falls apart in their relationship, and for the next 90 minutes I get to watch them trying to work it out and get themselves back together, I know that I'm going to die if I have to see that again. I need to see something blow up. There needs to be gunfire. There needs to be something of that sort. There needs to be that kind of action. I told her Pearl Harbor was a love story, if you want my opinion. There were two people in love. There were bombs going off in the background. What more could you ask for out of a movie? But it just shows the difference in the way we view things. You know, we're at the movie store one time, and we flip over, and here's the back of the movies. You know, when you flip it over, kind of read what the back of the movie, what the movie's about. This is what it said on the back of the box she had. A reporter is assigned to write a story about a woman who has left a string of fiancés at the altar. Yawn. That's what I thought. I flipped one over. It said, two escaped convicts and a female railway worker find themselves trapped on a train with no brakes and nobody driving. Now, that's a movie. Runaway bride, runaway train. There is a difference just in the way we view everyday normal circumstances. And so what we do is we have difficulty understanding what is the driving force behind that. But I think what God's going to do in Ephesians 5 is help us to understand something about the other person on both occasions. Tonight, understanding our wife a little bit better, or understanding some things that are important to understand. And then again tomorrow night on her being able to understand the husbands. And I think the things that God says in Ephesians 5 and 1 Peter 3 will give us some words that clue us in as to how we make application of that. What is it that I'm supposed to do today? Because I don't know why she likes the runaway bride kind of movie. I mean, I understand she's female and she likes it because she's female and women seem to like that kind of thing, but I'm not sure what the appeal is. Have you ever been to Kansas City? Anybody in here? Raise your hand if you've ever been to Kansas City. Don't know if you're aware of it or not, but they have world's worst tourist attraction in Kansas City from the male perspective. That is the home of Hallmark cards. And there is a Hallmark visitor center that if you've never been there, you just owe yourself either the treat or the other side of whatever the treat is to go there. It has a series of booths set up. You can go into these booths and close the door behind you and watch Hallmark commercials as long as you want to sit in there and watch Hallmark commercials. And I'll tell you exactly what you'll see when you go. I won't tell you what you'll see in the booth because I've never walked in one of the booths. But I'll tell you what you'll see in the room. You'll see women walking into the booths and a group of men standing in the center of the area of the booths having no idea why the women are walking in the booths because they're all coming out crying. And the men are thinking, I don't get it. How is that appealing? How is that an attraction? You know what? I just wish I could watch some commercials that will make me bawl my eyes out. I'll feel so much better. We don't understand that. But God's going to help us, I think, to understand how to approach that, because there is a difference, and it isn't because of some psychological information that we have out there in the world. It is because God has made us male and female, Genesis tells us. He created them male and female, and they are distinctly different from one another, and we need to praise God that they are different from one another. But it's difficult sometimes because of those differences, and I think that we can see what he would like us to understand. So what does she want? I'll tell you, that's where the problem starts. I'm trying to figure out, what does she want from me anyway? And that's the wrong question. Sometimes we ask the wrong question. If we'd ask the right question, it'd be easier to arrive at the answer. The question is that we need to know what she needs. What does she need? Not what does she want. What's the difference between wants and needs? Give me an answer. What's the difference between wants and needs? John, give me one difference between a want and a need. Absolutely. So a want is something that we desire. A need is basic. We would understand the difference between those two. Other things. And here's an example. I gave this one time in a lesson and then got in trouble afterwards. One of the ladies tried to correct me afterwards. I said, here's an example. Food is a need. Would you agree with that? Food is a need. Ice cream is a want. She came up to me afterwards and she said, you're wrong. Ice cream is absolutely a need. Well, it's not really, but yeah, food is a need. We understand that. But ice cream is a want. We may want certain foods, but we need food. Other differences. Let me ask you this way. Has there ever been a time when you really wanted some ice cream? Just nod your heads. Ever been a time that you just really wanted some ice cream? Has there ever been a time that you just absolutely didn't want any ice cream? Also, wants. I see I'm hearing no from some people, so maybe it is a need. Maybe I'm the one that's wrong. Wants and needs are different because they are fickle. They're not only basic, but they're different because one is fundamental, one is ever changing. It's fickle. It is not constant. And if I'm trying to fulfill somebody's wants, the difficulty in that is their wants won't be the same today as they are tomorrow. Or at least they won't be the same next week as they are this week. At some point, what we want changes, but what we need does not. And God wants us to understand this. On either side of the equation, husbands, it is your job to fulfill your wife's needs. That is your role in the marriage. When he talks about the two becoming one flesh, and he talks about these two joining into one new union, each has a role in that, and that is the fulfillment of the other person. That's the nature of when woman was created as a helper or a helpmeet suitable for the man, to fulfill what was missing in him, and vice versa, he's going to do the same for her. You need to fulfill. What is it that she needs? And if I'm a husband, I need to be seeking, what does my wife need to be fulfilled in her relationship in this marriage and in her relationship with God? How do I fill that role? How do I help her become, not how do I get her to become what she should, how do I help her to become what she should? That's my role in all of that. And so you're going to find out that there's three things that your wife needs. And we'll come back to all three of these in just a moment. One, she needs to feel secure. And God's going to give you some information that tells you that that is the case. She needs to feel secure. She needs to feel valued. She needs that. She needs to know what her role is in your life and how important that is. She needs to feel connected. Now, those are important because some of the things that are going to fulfill those will help us understand why they are so important to her. Sometimes some things that we think she needs are not really her primary need. They are indicative of her primary need. And God's going to give us commands. When God said to the Galatians, he said, grow not weary in well-doing. You remember that? Why would God say that? Why would God tell somebody, don't get tired when you're doing good? Anyway, what's the basic reason for that? It takes effort. There's a real likelihood that you will. Because of the effort required, God understands if you're doing good, you're going to grow tired sometimes. And he's telling you, don't get weary. When you're doing those good things, it isn't always easy. Don't grow weary because it happens. There's a reason he gives us a command. He's not just saying, hey, buck up there, fella. He's saying, understand that's a real issue, and you have to deal with it as a real issue. Same way when he's talking to the husband. So in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, here's what God says. God says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as the Lord does the church. He's going to say, here's some things that you need to do. And you need to understand why it is important to do them. When our children are young, some needs are very easy to grasp. Would you agree with that? Mothers will even tell you, when a child cries, it doesn't take mothers very long to tell you if the child is hungry, or if the child needs a diaper change, or if the child is in pain. Mother can distinguish many times with that issue, can't she? And she understands that the baby has a need, and mom understands what the need is, and so she seeks to fulfill the need. We need to be able to be perceptive enough to understand the needs of our spouse. How is it that I understand the need of my wife and therefore am able to fulfill that? And we're going to find that security really is the driving force of all of this. She is looking for something in her husband. That doesn't mean that she is a weak or spineless, or that she needs him because she's unintelligent, or that none of that is the issue. She wants to feel secure in the relationship, and it will show in things that she says and things that she does. And she's looking for that security in different ways. She's looking for physical security. She's looking for financial security. She's looking for social security. That's not tied to the financial security. That's in social settings. She's looking for security. She's looking for emotional security. And she needs to feel all of those. Holly Faith Phillips said, for most women, security is not primarily a material thing. It doesn't come from knowing in our heads that all our needs are provided for. Security for women is primarily a heart thing. Our deepest feelings of security come from being loved and cared about. I think that's true. She wants to know where she stands in the relationship. And you'd know that many times by one question. If I were to ask you this, men, tell me a question that your wife has asked you more than once, maybe many times within your marriage, that you rarely, if ever, ask her. Somebody ought to be able to get that one. What is it? Do you love me? Why? Because I don't want to know if my wife loves me. I don't care if my wife loves me, so I just don't ask her. No. Because love is not my most pervasive need as I am created by God. But it is her most pervasive need, and it's why God says immediately and first, husbands, love your wives. That is the first thing he tells these husbands. Love your wives, because this is an absolutely fundamental basic need. And so she asks, do you love me? And as men, sometimes we're boggled by that, because I've spent 37 years with my wife and she may still ask me, do you love me? Yes, I love you. Have I not convinced you of that yet? But she wants to feel that. Now there's a way to keep that from happening as frequently. What is that, men? What's that? Tell her and show her every day. Every day. You tell her you love her every day, she's probably not going to ask you the question. She asked that because she's seeking for that confirmation once again. And so she'll ask that kind of thing. So what kind of things do we do that are going to help her feel safe, that help her to feel loved? Let me just give you a couple of things, very practical, that we can move on to. As he talks about in Ephesians chapter 5, and we'll come back to one of the words that he uses here. Barbara DeAngelis says, emotional safety is the key that unlocks a woman's heart and soul. I think that's true. When she feels absolutely secure in the relationship, it allows her to function exactly as she desires to function. So, some ways to make her feel safe. When we spend time with her, As I mentioned the other day, taking her to your softball game does not qualify as quality time with your wife. I know that from personal experience. I know that. It doesn't work that way. You know, watching television, especially if you've got control of the remote and you're channel surfing and you're not talking, is not quality time with your wife. Give her the remote and let it stay on Lifetime, and I'm thinking she'll appreciate that. There are things that we can do that show her, you know, especially during dinner watching television. I tell you, one of the worst things they've ever done, in my opinion, and it's worse, it's bad because it affects me. You ever go to a restaurant that has televisions everywhere? I'm telling you, I've sat down looking at my food and looking at my wife and telling myself in my head, don't look at the TV. Don't look at the TV, only to find myself at some point glancing up because I see that there's a game on. How does she feel when she's talking to me and I'm looking at the TV? She called me to dinner one time. I said, Judy, hang on just a second. This match is almost over. And she's patient, and she needed to be patient because it was a curling match I was watching. You ever watch curling? It's mesmerizing, but it's the slowest sport that's ever been played in the world. What does my wife feel like when I say, honey, if you'll just wait about 5 minutes, this curling match between the USA and Canada will be over? She feels something in that. What kind of time am I willing to give her? Well, in Ephesians chapter 5, he says, Christ loved the church in what manner? What did he say? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and what? Gave himself up for her. She needs your time. She needs you to sacrifice that. For you to be willing to say that you are going to put that aside because she deserves your time. I'm going to sacrifice something of mine in order that she can have. If I'm loving her the way Christ loved the church, I forget Mark and focus on Judy. But I can tell you, when I run into troubles, it's because I start thinking about Mark and stop thinking about Judy. Secondly, when we allow entry into our world, this one's hard for me. I have to tell you, I'm not a phone person. I've got a guy that I talk to on the phone occasionally at Nashua, and we'll talk. We don't even say goodbye. We both know when the conversation's over, so he'll call me and ask me a question. I'll answer the question. We both hang up. We don't even say goodbye. If you've got another question, call back. That's the way the conversation goes. With the exception of one person, I call Ralph Walker or he calls me, those conversations can get pretty lengthy. So Ralph and I will talk for 30, 40, 45 minutes, maybe even an hour on the telephone, which is just out of character for me. And I get off the phone. What do you think the first question my wife asks me is? Who was it? Is the first one. Of course, if I'm talking an hour, she knows who it was. What's that? What'd you talk about? I respond normally with this remark. I've just spent 45 minutes on the phone with him. Do you want me to rehearse everything that we talked about for 45 minutes? That's the wrong question, because you know what the answer to that is? Yes, sure. I would like that. Why? Because she's nosy? Because she doesn't want me to have any private life at all? She doesn't want me to have a friend? No, because she wants to feel that she is a part of my world. That's where that security comes from. That's different than I am. She can talk for 45 minutes to one of her girlfriends on the phone, and I'm telling you, as she's hanging up, I'm thinking, please don't tell me what it was about. We think differently from one another, but he's saying, I need to sacrifice. This isn't about me. Do I enjoy spending the next 30 minutes saying, you know what, Ralph talked about this, and then I talked about this, and we shared? That's not pure enjoyment for me, but I understand I need to sacrifice my time, and I need to be willing to say, here's what we talked about, because that's what she would like. That's what she needs in the relationship. We need to allow entry into our world. We need to reassure her of our love. He says nourishing her. That's just a great word. Nourishing your wife. Feeding her. Do I think in terms of that? You know, what exactly does she need? When that baby's crying and you think, I need to nourish the baby. I mean, what would we think of the mother that said, you know what, honey, I'd like to give you a bottle or I'd like to feed you, but you know what, I got a TV show on that's pretty important to me right now. I mean, we'd say, what kind of mother is that? And yet a husband can say, you know what, my wife is needing feeding spiritually or emotionally, and we walk away from that. What kind of husband are we? Christ would never do that to his church. He feeds his church. He gives us every single thing that we need, every single time that we need it. Why? Because he said he came not to be served, but to what? To serve. That's his life. And I'm telling you, that's not an easy life. It isn't easy to give up oneself. If it was, Jesus wouldn't have had to have that battle with the disciples over and over and over again. Saying, quit thinking about yourself. Think about the other person. Paul tells us that in Philippians and says that's exactly who Christ was, doesn't he? He says, let us forget thinking about only ourselves. Let us esteem others. Well, Who first besides our wife? We reassure her, express it to her, check in with her, show her attention and affection. All of those things will help her to understand that we love her because we're trying to show her that the security issue is based on, is she more valuable to you than anything else in your life? That's what she wants to know. Outside of Christ himself, is she the most valuable thing to you? There are some different surveys that are taken regarding marriage. One of my favorites is they took a survey of a bunch of 10 and 11-year-old boys about the concept of marriage. And they had some pretty interesting things to say, including one boy who said, don't ever get married. You'd have to be crazy to get married. I'm not sure how he learned that by 11, but parents certainly were having an influence. But others have a view of what it is. And one boy said, you need to tell your wife she looks pretty. Even if she looks like a truck, he said, you need to tell her she looks pretty. And I presented that lesson in Texas, and I thought, that's the wrong place, because that'd probably be a compliment to many men's eyes in Texas. You know, honey, you look like a truck. Well, they treat their trucks better than their women sometimes. I hope there's no Texans in here, or at least lifelong Texans. But the idea is, what do I show value about? I've got a next-door neighbor that spends more time in a year cleaning and polishing his car than I have spent on all the cars I have ever owned. And I can tell you, there's no question in my mind, his car is more valuable to him than my car is to me. That's not a bad thing necessarily. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying, by what he does, it is easy to understand that car means something to him. Are our wives seeing in us the things that show her how we value her? How important that is. That's when she feels safest, most secure, when she knows that she is the most important thing in our lives, and we get in the way of that many times. Self-centered. Rare is the occasion that my wife feels undervalued, that I am probably not focusing more attention on myself than I should. If my whole life was dedicated first to only serving God and second to only serving Judy, those were the two primary functions of my life, I think she would always feel valued. But it doesn't always happen that way, because I'm flawed. And there's secrets to helping her feel valued. How do we do that? How am I going to help her feel valued in this life? I need to show her that her happiness matters, that it's a priority. That I need to know what matters to her and go out of my way to do it. I'm seeking to make sure that she understands that I'm listening to her, that I'm paying attention to her. Secondly, I need to show interest in her life. Not only allow entry into mine, but I need to show interest in her life. I need to genuinely care about what she's saying. Have you ever talked to somebody that you think doesn't care? You know, we used to occasionally, especially as kids, when somebody would be saying something to us. You ever do this to somebody who's talking to you? That's world's smallest phonograph playing My Heart Bleeds for You. I'll tell you, that's a pretty rude thing to tell somebody. Unfortunately, that was when we were teenagers saying that. You know, or if you can always go, that's world's smallest violin, but it's still playing the same song. You know, or as a kid, I remember somebody one time, I was telling somebody something, and they did it more jokingly than anything else, but he reached in his pocket and he pulled out a quarter. He says, go call somebody that cares. It's like, wow. But sometimes they don't have to say those kind of things. You ever talk to somebody that you can just tell they're not interested, they're disinterested, they're not paying attention, they're looking all around, whatever the case may be. But you've talked to other people who you know genuinely care because they show interest. They ask questions. They pay attention. Our wife wants us to show interest in her the way Christ shows interest in us. How much does he care for us? Isn't that what we're told? He cares for us. Don't you remember Jesus himself saying, look at the birds. You think I don't care for you? Look at the birds. How are they doing? Birds are doing pretty good, aren't they? Flowers look pretty good, don't they? You think you don't matter to me more than the flowers and the birds? I care about you. I care about you so much that I know the very hairs on your head. Yeah, he cares. And if I'm told to love my wife like he loves his church, I need to show her that I care. I need to express that interest. We need to show her that we value her input and need her input. It is tough for men to not let their egos get in the way. There have been so many times that I've thought, if my wife could just see it logically like I'm seeing it, she would understand it the right way. And that's not even remotely true. There are so many times that if I could have seen it better the way she was seeing it, I would have seen it the right way. But it's difficult sometimes to take her input and to value her input. I can be head of my household, leader of my house, and give great value to what she has to say, listening to it and implementing it when I know that it is, in fact, a better idea. Asking her advice, saying, you know what, you may be right, I may be completely wrong on that one. Lastly, don't take her for granted. You've got to show her that you don't take her for granted. How did Christ love the church this way? He descended from greatness, from riches, to poverty, because I mattered. You think that's not an incredible thing? I was talking to Everett today. He said that you're one of the classes is studying grace. Is it not almost beyond imagination to know that God sent his Son from the riches of heaven to this earth to be abused and killed because he loved me, not just us collectively? If every one of you had not needed that, he would have sent his Son so that I could go home with him. How great is that? Just nod your heads or anything. That's a fabulous thing, is it not? The grace of God? He descended from greatness to show how important we were to him, though we were flawed. It wasn't based on our merit. It isn't based on her merit. It's husbands doing for his wife what he should be doing. And then finally, as we demonstrate that, actions and words, we're going to help her with something, because she needs to feel connected. And to help her feel connected, you need to kindle the flame of romance. We said yesterday, marriages do not survive on romance alone, and they do not. But you think romance is not a part of God's idea? You think God doesn't understand the emotional stimulation and tie between a man and a woman? Go back and read the Song of Solomon. There are reasons sometimes that we don't study that book, because it is just brutally honest and brutally forward in what it says. But there's these incredible words. To us, they don't make sense. You know, if I told my wife that, that her neck looked like a tower of some type, that I'm not thinking she's going to think that's the greatest of compliments. But then it did. But it's the idea of, what is it that he's saying to her? And why is it that he's saying it to her? Why did God even record all of that for us? Romance is a part of marriage, and we need to kindle the flame of romance. And how do I know that? In Ephesians chapter 5, he said, cherish her. You remember the song Cherish? The association? Cherish is the word I use to describe that feeling that I have here for you inside. And you know what that word means? I got to tell you, this is a great word. He's talked about the sacrifice, and he's talked about nourishing. And in 1 Peter chapter 3, when he talks about honor your wife, that's another great word. That's placed great. That's a scales thing. How weighty is your wife? And don't go the wrong direction with that, man. That's not what he's saying. How weighty, how important. Is she the thing that tips the scales this way because she's so valuable? That's that word, honor your wife. Treat her as incredibly valuable. And here he says, cherish her. This word means to soften with body heat, is literally the idea. In other words, holding close. And the best description of this for me is, you ever seen a baby that has tensed every or nearly every muscle in their body when they're crying? I mean, that would wear me out in about a half a second if I could even tense all the muscles at one time. But babies will go tense, and their hands will go tense, and their arms and their legs, and they look almost like they're vibrating. They're so tense, and nobody can get them to stop crying. But mama takes them, and mama holds them close. And I don't know how else to describe this other than to say that the baby melts. Isn't that what it looks like? When you see that baby relaxing, that baby just kind of melts into the arms of the mother. That's exactly what that word means, cherish. Soften. Soften with that warm embrace. That's what he says to do to your wife. You think romance isn't a part of marriage? God says you soften her with that warm. You make her feel connected and soft. Yes, sir. What's that? Cuddle. Good point. You know, and men just love to cuddle, don't they? It's tough. It's not with her. Why? Because, even we go to bed at night and she wants to cuddle and I'm thinking, I want to sleep. I can't sleep if you got your arms draped all over me. I'm just saying we view that different. It's not that drastic. I can say those things because Judy's not here. And I know nobody here. It doesn't go any farther than this room, right? Yeah, I probably won't even make it home before I get texted from her. As we think about that relationship, what am I doing to cuddle, to hold close, to soften, to show her that kind of romance? There's a few things that you can do to kindle your wife's fire. The things you can do to bring the romance. One is to show the physical affection. Men are all or nothing when it comes to affection. They don't think in terms of just giving their wife an embrace. I'm not saying no men do. I'm just saying generally we don't think in terms of just a passionate hug or a passionate kiss that stops right there and there's no intent to go any further. But she wants that physical affection. She wants to hold hands. She wants you to have that kind of even physical connection to her. We need to show her affection without the intimacy of the full physical relationship. She wants to see that. I love what one man said. One man said, husbands need to become the perfect lover outside the bedroom. What do we show her? How are we doing that? And it makes a difference to her. I can walk up behind Judy. She could be washing dishes, busy working, washing dishes, trying to get the kitchen cleaned up. And I can walk up behind her, put my arms around her waist, and lean over and give her a kiss on the neck and just make her evening for her. She is so appreciative of that. And I can just do that and say, I just want to tell you, I love you so much. And I can go back and do my work. Everything for her just moves easier from that point forward. I can be sitting at the computer, and I can be working away trying to get a sermon or some other kind of work done. She could come up behind me, put her arms around me, lean over and kiss me on the neck, and I'm thinking, is this going somewhere? Or if not, I've got work to do. There are differences between us. That's all I'm saying. She wants the physical affection, and that's because God said she needs it. He said, cherish your wives, men. Cherish her. That's God's word. That's not my word. Secondly, receiving compliments is the way that you kindle that romance. She wants to be told. There's a reason she comes out and asks you, how do you think this dress looks? Same reason she asked, do you love me? If every time she walked out of the closet, you step back and said, wow, you are stunning. I'm guessing she's not going to ask you too often. She's already ready for the response. She wants the compliments. She wants to know that you pay attention. That's why she asks those unfair questions. And you need to be careful, man. You understand those unfair questions, don't you? You come home and she says, notice anything different, and you know you're in trouble. You don't even know if she means her or the house yet. So you're looking around trying to figure out what's different. What is different? That happened one time when we had some friends over. And our youngest son was home visiting, and as they were sitting at the table, our son turned and talked to, he knew this couple that was visiting with us, it was another younger couple, and he looked at the girl and said, oh, wow, he says, did you do something different with your hair? My son's on one side of her, her husband's on the other, she didn't even look at my son. He asked her the question, and she turns like this, and she says, yes, I did, 3 weeks ago, thank you very much. Husband hadn't said anything. She wants to be noticed, and that's a good thing. I need to show her that. I need to express that to her, show her that I pay attention and that I am still astounded by her beauty in my life, because I pray that to the day I die, that I will always feel as I do now, that my wife is the most beautiful woman that I know, because that goes way beyond just physical appearance. You see so much more in your spouse, and I can always find something to compliment my wife on and show her how precious she is to me. We need to seek to do that. And then we talked about time with her, but scheduling time for her is very important. Men don't send cards to their wives very often. Why? Some man tell me why you don't very often send your mail. I'm talking about mailing. You don't mail a card to your wife. Why? What's that? It costs money. I'm thinking, there's a part of a man that says, what's a stamp now, 47 cents, is that right? So 47 cents. There's a part of a man that's saying, I live here, and so I'm going to pay 47 cents to go to the post office and mail something back here when I could just set it on the table to begin with. That doesn't make sense. Women love flowers. Judy loves flowers. Men don't like flowers. They don't think that's the greatest gift. Men, why isn't flowers such a great gift? They die. Why do you think women like flowers? Because they die. Now, they like them because they're pretty, too. But it shows her that she's more valuable than just a little bit of money. She knows they're going to die, too, in 2 weeks, but you are willing to still put forth the money and put it in. It makes her feel special. She loves to receive cards in the mail. Why? Because she knows you didn't stop at the drugstore on the way home from work that day because it was your anniversary. You bought the card several days in advance and put it in the envelope and mailed it to her. You scheduled all of that, and she feels very secure in that, very connected in that. We need to make sure that we're helping her feel that way. The key is in all of these things, making sure that your wife feels as special in your relationship as the church should feel in the relationship it has with Jesus Christ. I could not feel more special in my relationship with Christ than I do. I couldn't. Not, every time I think about what he's done and what he does regularly for me, how could I feel any more wanted or cared about? I know he cares. Those questions come up, and you need to be careful of that. I love what one man said, and we'll leave this in conclusion. Because you'll get those other unfair questions, like you're walking through the mall. Some woman walks by, and your wife says, did you like her haircut? I'm just telling you, you're already in trouble. Because there's no good answer for that. You could say, whose haircut? And she knows that you're just not probably telling the truth. You could tell her, her haircut was nice, but it probably looked better on you, and you may be a little out of trouble. One man, I love one man's description. He said, the best you can hope for is to have a stroke. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. It should be a relationship that as a husband, I seek every day in the most practical ways that I know how. And the ways that God shows me and the words that he uses, like nourish and cherish, the words that he uses like love and honor, that I need to think in terms of how can I demonstrate to my wife every single day that I love her the way that Jesus Christ loves me and his entire church. That's what we're trying to demonstrate, because he does love his church. If you're not a Christian, I would tell you there's nothing should make you feel any better than to know that Jesus Christ loves you with every ounce of energy he has, even to the point, it says, of death in Philippians chapter 2. He died just so you and just so I could have a chance to go home eternally with him to his Father. You think that's not love? How could we reject that kind of love? And he says, if you want that, I don't care what you've ever done before. I don't care who you are, where you're from. The song we're about to sing says, just as I am. All our flaws, he understands that. But I come to him with a heart that is committed to him and chooses to follow him. If you'd like to be baptized into Christ tonight based on that, we hope that you'll choose to do so. If you've not studied that, ask one of these people here to study that with you, what God says about how to establish that relationship. For those of us that are Christians, may we first understand how much he loves us every day. And for those of us that are husbands, may we seek to love like he loves. And tomorrow night, Lord willing, we'll have a chance to talk about the other side of the equation. If we can help you tonight, let us know while we stand and while we sing.